And welcome everyone. It's good to be here with everyone again. Seemed like that was a really long break that we had. And so I invite us all just to meet together in silence. And I encourage you to close your eyes, to feel into your hearts, and to connect with that which is good and true. That which is eternally here. I invite you to come into your hearts and connect with that which is divine, that which is holy about your nature. I invite you to connect with the purity of your hearts. The vast quietude and spaciousness of your presence. And to join me in this recognition. This recognition of your divinity. The one divinity. So will you join me in coming deeply into this place of peace? And so we do this by feeling into our heart, by feeling, by acknowledging the direct experience of our nature. I invite you to put all thoughts aside. To put the past aside and the future aside and simply open. Open to that which is good, that which is beautiful about you, that which is radiant and luminous and simultaneously. I invite you to open your crown chakra. Open your hearts. Open them to this greater divinity. Can we open and be receptive to God the Father, God the Mother? Can we be open to the energy of Christ consciousness? And simply receive. Receive a blessing. Receive this experience of divinity descending to us. Can you open? Will you join me in being humble? Humility comes from a willingness to not know what God is, but a willingness to open and directly experience her love, her majesty. As she comes into us as her heart awakens our heart. As her heart merges and floods our very nature. And so I'm inviting a great willingness. A willingness to experience the hugeness of God, the hugeness of grace in us as us. Be open, be receptive, and see what happens. See what happens in you. See how your experience begins to change, begins to grow, begins to become filled with light. Simply through willingness to let go, letting go of our attachment to our egoic nature, letting go of our attachment to our mind. See what happens. What truly becomes your experience? When we let go of the commentary, when we let go of the judgments, when we let go of thought, and instead drop into the heart. Open the body. Notice what happens when we relax the shoulders and the jaw and the lower belly, the pelvic floor, the legs, the feet, the arms, the hands. Notice what happens when you open yourself to true communion with God. Notice what happens. And so the invitation is simply to let go into your experience, to let go into the space of humility, to let go into the space of receptivity. And invite the divine in. This time is an invitation for our highest to come forward. The highest to come forward. It's an invitation for us to let go of our mediocrity, our habitualness, it's a time for us to recognize the vastness of your own mind, the vastness of your own presence. And as we open the door to this vastness, simultaneously a time to invite God in, to invite life to flood us with grace. It's a time to invite God to lift our spirits, to take that which is heavy out of us, to give birth to something greater. And so I encourage you just to notice, what is it? What is it that's happening within you? What is your experience? What is good and true and beautiful about you? And I encourage you to sit with this question. for our period of time together this evening, but also to sit with this question for your life. Someone recently, they wrote me an email. I asked for email questions, and of course you're welcome to type one in the message board too if you have something you want me to speak about tonight. But someone who I've been meeting with, she emailed me this question. And basically it went something like this, that she's been afflicted. She's been afflicted with issues, especially in regards to her physical health and how it makes her look on the outside. And without getting into the details of this, oftentimes we are afflicted. We are afflicted with physical pain, emotional pain, confusion. We're afflicted with a body that doesn't work correctly. Whether it's our old knee that's always hurting, or for me, I had tremendous back pain for 10 or 12 years. The recent one I'm having fun with is I have a head injury that I get, almost daily headaches, daily migraines, which are quite intense. And it's easy for us to lose our faith. It's easy for us to lose trust in God when our body is not working, when things are not going our way. It's easy to get lost in the pain. Being lost in pain, that's one of the definitions of samsara. When pain comes forward, oftentimes we don't see clearly. We get confused by the pain. Or if our body is not working properly, if we have trouble, or we get weight and we can't lose the weight, or we have acne, or if we have trouble seeing, or whatever it is. When I look at my emails, it's just full of individuals who tell me they're deeply struggling with some aspect of their physical body. And oftentimes when we struggle with some aspect of our physical body, it prevents us, or it seemingly prevents us, from realizing our beauty, from realizing our tenderness, from realizing that we are actually made of light. Made of light. And so oftentimes in this evolutionary world, God challenged us with something. We may be great parents, and our children may be addicted to drugs. Maybe wonder, what is this about? What is this really about, God? And oftentimes God gives us something to challenge us to grow into a greater aspect of our being. God challenges us to learn to love ourselves deeply and fully. Deeply and fully. I've had many individuals come to me who struggled with their weight. They said, God, what is this about? I've tried all the diets. I've tried all the food. I've tried the detoxing this. I've tried the exercising. And oftentimes, what God is inviting for them, God is inviting them to sit with this inquiry. Do you love yourself? No matter what container you come in, no matter what your body does, do you love yourself? Do you love yourself if you're tall? And your mind is judging yourself as too tall. Do you love yourself if you're short? Your mind is judging yourself too short. Do you love yourself if your body weight is too big or too small, according to how you judge yourself? Can you still love yourself? Can you love yourself if your skin breaks out in acne? Can you love yourself if you struggle with addiction? Can you still love yourself? Can you look in the mirror and see your beauty? If you're 76 years old and your mind is wishing you were 26 years old, can you let go of this judgment that you should be otherwise? And can you look into the mirror and see your divinity? Experience your goodness. Experience your tenderness. Experience the beauty and the radiance of your heart, despite that judgmental mind. This is a great question to sit with. One of the things that happens with true spiritual awakening is we begin to realize how beautiful we are. For if you cannot truly love yourself, if you cannot look into the mirror and see God looking back at you, it will be very difficult to be awake in this world. Very difficult, almost impossible, if not impossible. Can you look in the mirror and see the person looking back at you is God? Can you look into her eyes and feel the softness, the gentleness, the innocence of your own presence? Now, oftentimes I ask individuals to do this and they say, "Not me, don't make me do it, Craig." You know, I talk with people on Skype during the work week, and I always tell them, look down at the little picture of yourself on the screen, you know, because oftentimes Skype, they give you a little picture of yourself. Can you look at that picture? Look at that moving face. Can you look at that presence there and see divinity pouring forth? Can you do this? Can you step into your heart and out of your judgmental mind? And see that which is beautiful about you. You know, it's quite unfortunate, but I think, you know, many of us grew up in this culture where there's models on every commercial, there's models on all the magazine covers, you know, when we stand in line at the supermarket. And one of the jobs of the ego is to play the comparison game, to compare us against others. And many people are afflicted by this game of comparison. But comparison stops. It truly stops. The very movement of comparison stops when you step into the hugeness of your divinity. When you let go of the commentary, that ongoing commentary within the space of the ego. The commentary ends when we descend into the heart. When we come into the heart, the commentary ends. For the heart is a movement of love, it's a movement of oneness, it's a movement of unity. When we feel into our hearts, we naturally begin to see beauty. We experience goodness. We experience a deep and profound presence of love. A deep and profound presence of love. And so when we live in this world and we feel afflicted, when we deeply struggle with some aspect of our body, our mind, our emotional nature, one of the major reasons we find ourselves so deeply afflicted, one of the reasons the affliction continues for many, many days or weeks or months or even years, is because we are denying some aspect of our heart. We're denying some aspect of our divinity. It's hard to be afflicted if you're connected with your heart. It really is. It really is. For when you come into your heart, you see love, you experience love. But simultaneously, you're also connected with truth. A truth which knows how to move and act in the world. A truth which will guide you. And let you know if something needs to change, if we need to do something different, if there's some aspect of our life which is out of alignment, you will feel pain, pain in your body, literally pain in your heart. It's really pain on top of your heart is what you feel. For your true heart is always brilliant, eternally beautiful. It's the seat of your true nature. And so if anyone else has a question, I invite you to bring it forward, or if there's anything you'd like me to speak about, please bring it forward. Otherwise, I'll continue to look through my emails here. Here's a question. Here's a question I get on a daily basis. Craig, is there evil in this world? Is there evil? And he goes on to say, you know, something about being... I'm going to put this word in there, but he struggles with, I'll say he's afflicted by, but he struggles with this affliction of, if he had an awakening, and after he had this spiritual awakening, he started to begin to see and experience strange and, you know, somewhat scary psychic phenomena, you know, while dreaming and also while awake. And so he was wondering about that. And so a two-part question here. Is there evil in the world? You know, and I say absolutely, unequivocally not. But this is an evolutionary world, a world where there's every level of existence, every level of existence present. And so if you look at the lowest level of humanity, you're at a very animalistic level. where war and rape and violence is it, which it just seems normal. And so when we turn on the news and we see, this genocide going on in Sudan or Somalia, yes, of course it breaks your heart. Is it evil? No, that's not evil. It's close to evil. There is no force of darkness. There is only God. But God created a world that's full of evolution. That's movement is evolution. And so that means us as a species, the human species, we must evolve through all the layers and levels. The way Sri Aurobindo spoke about this, he was one of the lineages that I spent, a good 20 years studying in, the Aurobindo lineage. And his teaching was this, that we are evolving into the divine realm, evolving the very matter of this realm. That earth will one day be a heaven realm, a heaven world. That the human being will one day have a deathless body. Now, if you turn on the news, you'll probably see that we're probably a long ways off. A long ways off from Earth being a heaven realm. We could easily look at Earth and say, well, it's a dark world with all the pain and confusion. I listened a little bit too much to the news this weekend with all the trouble that our president's been getting in. Politicians, it seems so crazy, to hear what's going on. But there's a movement that's happening. A movement out of the lower realms and into the higher. Sometimes it means that as humans, we fall on our face. As cultures, we might fall on our face. Empires will come and go and be replaced by greater empires. But as a whole, our consciousness is evolving, it's growing. It's growing out of that which is lower and into that which is higher. Absolutely. And so the reason this individual, he asked me this question, is there evil? It's because sometimes at night he has dreams which are violent or scary. Or sometimes in his waking reality, he sees things. Some people might call these entities or, astral forces or astral beings. He said, Craig, what is all this about? And I could say throughout my journey, I've done my best to stay out of the psychic realms and the psychic planes because they can be messy, they can be confusing, they can be complicated. Oftentimes, if you go to, a lot of the major cities has these things called a psychic fair where there's, people who seems like they have some extra doors open than most of society doesn't have. And oftentimes, if you look at them, at their consciousness, you can feel into them, it almost feels that they have a screw loose, they're on the edge of mental illness. So his question, is there anything to these astral planes? Do they exist? Yes, absolutely. Are they bad or evil? No. Are there many levels of existence within them? Yes. Yes. Yes, I've had many of those planes visit me during periods of meditation or sometimes strange things have visited me when I'm walking down the street, but I just pay them no attention. I keep my feet on the ground. To me, we have enough to play with in this world. We don't need to worry about what's going on in the other realms. If we're going to open to any other realm, besides the practical, everyday, earthly existence, I encourage us to open up, just to open to God, and let her flood into you. Let her carry you. Let her fill you with light. Let her fill you with light. And so this is how I recommend living, where we're not playing around in the other realms. If they come to us, anything strange or bizarre or spooky or whatever it is, oftentimes, there's times when I walk down the street or I'm meeting with someone and I'll be visited by different angels, and my heart is filled with grace. And so oftentimes I'm asked, well, could you be visited by, a malicious force too? And say, well, is the force really malicious or is it confused? Is there such thing as a malicious force? No. No. But are there confused energies in other realms? Sure. Just like there's confused people on the planet, on planet Earth. There's confused people. It's not that people are, some people are evil. Oftentimes they have a deeply broken heart. They're deeply confused. They're deeply lost in their own suffering. It's not that they're evil. It's that they've lost touch with their heart. They've backed themselves into a corner because they find themselves so scared, so terrified of life, that they decided to turn to violence or manipulation or whatever it is. Any time in the past when I looked at an individual who was manipulating me, when I fell into their consciousness, I felt this great pain. I felt sadness. I felt heartache and despair. And when people are angry at us, it's oftentimes not because we did something, but because they are hurting inside. Because they're hurting inside and they're projecting their hurt onto us. They're wanting to control the situation and they can't, and so they attack us. And so when this is the case, can we work with? Can we work with forgiveness? Can we be compassionate? Can we see that? It doesn't have to do with us, but rather with them. Can we see that they are struggling? And meet them with love. We could do the same exercise with ourselves. When we see ourselves judging ourselves, when we are attacking ourselves, can we stop? Feel the pain of our own judgment. And allow that pain to break our heart open. This requires that we're courageous, that we're willing to feel, that we are willing to experience the truth of our heart, the strength of our heart. And by that I mean when our heart comes face to face with pain, it always responds with love. It always responds with love. So if we come face to face with pain, face to face with judgment, face to face with anger or insecurity, within us or within another, can we respond with love? Can we respond with love? And so again, if anyone has a question, please bring it forward. And then otherwise, I'll continue to look at these emails here. And here's an email I received. It's about trust. Craig, I've had a really difficult life. I've experienced so much pain, so much loss, so much heartache. I have a series of broken relationships, and I'm having trouble trusting. It seems like it would make sense for me just to close my heart and protect myself from being harmed again. But when I close my heart, I live in a very painful and lonely way. Well, yes, I think most of us know this experience. We know this experience of being hurt by life, being harmed by life. And it's difficult. Our ego tells us when we're harmed by another that we should shut down, that we should hide. That we should contract. And when we do this, the more we contract, the more lonely we feel. The more depressed we feel, the more anxious we feel, the more scared we feel. It's funny because our ego thinks that if we contract, if we keep our heart closed from life, that this will protect us. But we're not really protecting ourselves when we contract. We're actually rejecting, we are rejecting ourselves. We're closing ourselves down from life. It's like we reject ourselves before we give life an opportunity to reject us. It's a very painful way to live. Well, I often say that, you know, heartbreak was one of my greatest teachers. It's through heartbreak. The funny thing is, it's through heartbreak that I learned to become radically open. Because when our heart breaks, we have a choice to shut down, to close, to hide, to put up walls, or to allow our heart to break open and to commune with life. But in order to commune with life, we have to be willing to feel. We have to be willing to experience. We have to be willing to share in love despite the hell we've experienced, despite the pain we've experienced. We have to do the opposite of what our ego tells us. Our ego tells us if we've been hurt, shut down. Shut down or attack or blame or project or do what, you know, whatever the people. But this is no way to live. Living a life with a closed heart is not really a life worth living. It will feel like hell. It'll feel like eternal suffering. Can we be courageous enough if our heart is broken to open it again? To continue to walk forward into the light? Can we trust that there is a God? Even if we experience pain, can we trust that? Can we trust that there is a space for me in this world? There's a space for you and for I. If there was not that space, we would not have been created. Can we trust that God loves us? And God made us in her image and likeness. Can we trust that there is something beautiful here, something true here? But see, that requires that we are willing to come into our heart and to listen to our truth and to not believe the voice of ego. If we listen to the voice of ego, we will greatly struggle. We will live in incredible pain. And so this question, this eternal question of should I close my heart? This is like the inquiry of the ego, should I close my heart? Should I keep it closed? So the inquiry of the ego is, should I shut down? Should I run or should I attack? That's the question for our egoic nature. So the question for our true nature is, can I eternally be open? Do I trust that there is a place for me in this world? Do I trust that I will be okay? That which is was true about me, do I trust that I will be okay, that my presence will be okay, despite the pain of being human, despite the confusion of this world? Can I connect with this truth and live from this truth? Can I see for myself that there's something radiant here, despite the movement of ego, despite the movement of mind, despite the movement of emotion? Can I see, can I directly experience that there is something true here, something good here? This is a great question. I can remember one of my teachers said to me a long time ago, I was having a really hard time, and he said this funny thing to me. He said, Craig, it doesn't matter what you think, and it doesn't matter how you feel. And I looked at him and I thought, boy, I was really pissed. I was really upset. Because according to our ego, it's all about what we think and all about how we feel. If we don't feel good, that means life is bad and there is no God. And according to our ego, every thought we have is true. He looked at me. My teacher had the audacity to look at me. He said, Craig, it doesn't matter what you think, it doesn't matter what you feel. And boy, did my blood boil when he said that to me. So I said, you don't understand. I didn't really say that, but that was what I was thinking inside. You don't understand, Craig. No, I'm sorry, you don't understand, my teacher. I've had numerous teachers say it to me. So you could fill in the blank there. Inside I would be saying, you don't understand what I'm experiencing, how much pain I'm in. And they knew clearly how much pain I was in. They knew clearly what I was thinking. They just didn't believe in the pain. as the ultimate reality. They didn't believe in the thoughts that were floating through my floating through my mind as the ultimate reality. One of the definitions of samsara is we take our thoughts to be 100% true. We take our feelings to be the ultimate reality. And by our feelings, I mean our emotional feelings. Our emotional nature is not the ultimate reality. Now, if we're just a human being or just an animal being, well, then our thoughts and our emotional feelings are the ultimate reality. But if we're connected to our presence, a presence which can see and witness thoughts, a presence which can see and witness feelings, well, right away we begin to discover there's more. There's more to what we are than we had previously admitted. For samsara is being attached fully, 100%, to your thoughts and to your emotional feelings. But when we step back into the vast space of awareness, we step back into the incredible purity and luminosity, you have the space of the heart. Well, it's hard to take your thoughts too seriously. It's hard to take them seriously at all because they, what's that old saying? They're pale in comparison. We see right away they're not the ultimate. In fact, to even be able to witness your thoughts means there's something else here. There's something else here. And I see this experience all the time where I have, two people come into my office. Maybe they're a couple. Maybe they're married, or, whatever it is. And both of them are living in the same, same practical everyday experience. And one of them may be incredibly happy, and the other one is could may be incredibly miserable. And it always makes me chuckle a little bit because we could quickly, wonder, well, which is true? which is the true experience of reality? Which is true? But see, that's all relative reality, just like wondering which is the relatively true experience of reality, like which person is right, the Democrats or the Republicans, the conservatives or the liberals, the this or the that. But see, that's not what I'm speaking about. I'm speaking about when we step out of the commentator, when we step out of thought and into the silence. Well, what's true? When you step into the silence, you begin to see that this silence, it expands in every direction. You begin to see that this silence is pregnant with love, is pregnant with truth. You begin to see that this silence is so utterly compassionate. So utterly beautiful. That you begin to forget whatever it is you're thinking about. whatever it is that you were thinking about. Earlier today, I found myself out in the forest. I'm just walking by myself. And even though it's the dead of winter here in Colorado, I felt the absolute aliveness of the forest. I looked out and just saw the colors dancing. The reds, the browns, the greens, the grays, the blues. I saw the big boulders coming alive. I felt the majesty of the mountain, the hugeness of the sky. I felt birds floating through my very nature. It's so beautiful to get out, to let go of the thinking mind. To connect with the goodness of life, the beauty of life. But we absolutely miss this beauty. If we are overly attached to the commentary, we miss the beauty of life if we're connected to the inner judge or the inner critic. I know so many individuals who are so absolutely beautiful. They have such pure hearts, such innocent natures, and yet they have a human mind which is eternally judging and attacking itself. At some point on the path, it gets exhausting to attack ourselves. It gets exhausting to judge yourself. At some point on the path, it just doesn't make any sense anymore. To judge ourselves or to judge another. It literally feels like poison within the space of our own consciousness. And so if we find ourselves, we find ourselves judging, if we find ourselves attacking, can we feel the pain of that? Can we be conscious enough to feel the pain of what we're doing to ourselves or another? And allow the truth of that pain to set us free. Allow the truth of that pain to steer us into a different direction. A direction where we come into our heart. And we naturally respond with love. How our world will change. If we're willing. To let go of the judge. If we're willing to let go of the critic. One of the most healing things we can all do is to let go of judgment. To let go of it. To not believe in it. And oftentimes individuals ask me, Craig, I'm trying not to judge the judge, or I'm trying not to believe the critic. But he keeps coming back. She keeps criticizing me in my head. You know, it's almost like a another person in there. My answer is always the same. My response is always the same. Can you also love that part of yourself? Can you kill her with kindness? Can you feel the pain of the judge? Can you feel the pain of that habit? Can you acknowledge the struggle in that? The absolute struggle. Oftentimes it's through meeting the judge with love, meeting the critic with love. That the critic heals, the judge heals, and empties out of our consciousness. Can we embrace every rejected, divided, confused, mean, angry aspect of our own humanity? Can we meet it with love? If we want to be awake in this world, if we want to be connected to our absolute beauty, we want to experience a sky-like mind, a vast, spacious mind. We cannot have all these forces fighting within ourselves. We have to meet each and every one of them with love. Must acknowledge their pain, acknowledge their sadness, acknowledge their root. Why are these forces arising within us? We must acknowledge that. That they're here because at some point we learned that this was the way, whether it was from our mom or our dad or our sister or brother or society or whatever it was. And within that root is a seed of pain. And we must embrace that pain with love. And as we do so, the darkness heals. It turns to light. So I thank you all for joining me this evening. I know we spoke about many different things, and some of the topics were quite unrelated, but in the end, it all comes down to loving. Can we stand in the love? Can we meet darkness with light? Can we meet pain with light? Can we embrace all the confused, broken aspects of ourself? So thank you all so much for showing up this evening. I feel a great love from your heart, great connection to your heart. So peace be with you all. May you all have a good evening. I'll be back next week.